Welcome back into the Fantasy Sanctuary. It is another best ball show, and I'm joined by another amazing guest. We've got Sam Hoppen of 4for4 and BetSpurt. He's a guy who combines data with incredible fantasy football visualizations. You know, if you're not following Sam on Twitter, you're missing out on some of the most beautiful graphs that you'll see on Twitter. We're going to be talking a bit about Sam's work with 4for4, ADP, best ball, where things are at this year, and jump into a draft shortly. Sam, how's the offseason treating you?
It's going well. I was really enjoying the sort of the background music for the intro here. It sounded like I was about to go into a bit of a meditation, which is nice. But yeah, going well. We're talking before the show. It's going by quickly. I know we're still in June and have a couple months left in the off season, but it is it's going to be football season here sooner rather than later.
Very much so. It was a point today where I was like, I actually need to start drafting a little more aggressively with the amount of teams I've got if I'm going to get everything in by the time September rolls around. But in terms of the music, ever since Pete Overzet just ruined so many fantasy football introductions with his famous tweet, it was, you've got to try a little harder to find some music that's different. Have you found, I mean, this season in offseason in particular, you know, there's over $35 million of prize funds available in best ball. Have you found that appetite for best ball is pushing you to find new ways to visualize data?
Yeah, certainly. It's not just that there's growing interest in best ball, but there's more data out there too. Now that we have, you know, 3 years of data with Best Ball Mania with Underdog, you know, we're able to get some historical data from sites like FFPC, things like that. And even though, again, we have 3 years, like it's still a relatively small sample, even though it's, again, like millions and millions of rows of data, because you can take some larger macro takeaways from the data, but each off season and each draft season is its own unique complex puzzle, which is the fun thing. I mean, this year is different from last year, and so what we might have been able to say about last year is could be completely wrong about this year, and we're not going to find out for another 9 months here. But it's the best ball analysis has evolved more, not away from, but more towards the game theory and the, again, sort of the macro aspects of drafting, as opposed to the player takes of saying, you know, draft Ezekiel Elliott or whatever, don't draft Ezekiel Elliott. It's okay, don't draft the RB12 in the first round of a draft, stuff like that. So it is very interesting, just sort of the shift in content for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really good point because, I mean, so many people, you know, we've gone from 2 years ago, the sickos were drafting 100 teams, but now the sickos are drafting 1,000 teams plus. And the casual audience, you know, with Underdog doing like, you know, $3 Pomeranians or $7 Poodles and DraftKings with their $3 and $4 contests, even for the casual person who probably isn't even thinking about fantasy NFL just yet, by the time they roll around in July and see all these contests at a really cheap price, then they know that it's time to load up and they can actually do that without breaking the bank. So I think it's definitely interesting. In terms of like where best ball analysis has gone, it feels like this offseason there's been a big focus on kind of ADP value. And now we're not so much focused on, is this the best player like you said, but am I getting the best deal out of this one? So, and one of the articles that you've wrote this year was kind of in response to Mike Leone's Best Ball Manifesto, which is a fantastic piece of work, and everybody should check that out. But you kind of took it a little step further, and you developed this the Best Ball Data Curve, and it's a fantastic article that I'd urge everyone to go and check out on 4for4. But can you give us an idea of like what's behind the Best Ball Curve and why you think it's kind of important?
Yeah, so again, huge shout out, and apologies to all the listeners. My dog is freaking out. Apparently, it's not as big of a best ball fan as we are. But Leone did a great job with his whole manifesto, sort of outlining the methodology behind his draft curve and what he used it for, and then actually doing a lot more research with it, which I'm hoping to do in the next couple of weeks here. But it's essentially a way to value fantasy football draft picks and understand the non-linear nature of those draft picks, because the difference between the 8th and 9th pick is much different than the difference between the 68th and 69th pick. Like, it's, even though they're one pick differences, the drop off is a lot steeper, and, you know, in the first round versus it's a lot flatter in the last, you know, as we move down the draft. So it's also a different way to value picks again, and different way to measure player investment as well. You know, a lot of the analysis historically has been around, you know, different roster construction builds. So 2 quarterback, 5 running back, 7 receiver, 3 tight end, or whatever. In reality, like, 5 running backs could mean a lot. It could be 5 running backs in the first 6 rounds. It could be 5 running backs in the last 5 rounds. Like, it's, there's a lot of context that could be captured in that, that we don't see in those just sort of general roster construction. So it's a way to, again, measure sort of player investment or position investment using the overall draft curve. And then the position specific one, again, is just sort of looking at the peaks and valleys of where positions are most valuable. Now, you need a lot of context with this because it uses all 3 best ball mania tournaments, but because BBM3 was so huge, it's skewing a lot more towards those results. And because of that, we see something like you see with the quarterbacks here being very highly valued in sort of the 4th through 6th round range. But that's because we had guys like Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts being drafted in that range that were so successful last year that it makes them valuable there. So now my dog is deciding he wants to play.
It's all good.
I very much apologize for that. But again, it can help put some value as well to reaching on different players ahead of ADP, and valuing players from past drafts. So I think it's, again, it's just a different way. It's still a descriptive tool that we can use, but it's a different way to evaluate teams.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the big takeaways for me was kind of how you identified elite quarterbacks as being like a key area. And it's definitely been one of the hot topics of this year in terms of what people have been talking about. And what, I mean, this graph doesn't show up very well on here, but you can see here, this is the quarterbacks going through BBM. But in your article about how to deal with those quarterbacks, it felt very much like you were kind of looking at that second tier behind Mahomes, Allen and Hurts level, looking at like the Lamar, Justin Fields area. Do you think that that's an area where the value is much better at quarterback this offseason?
I do think it is. And I think it's, there's twofold, I guess, reason why. Is one, I mean, we're already seeing those top 3 quarterbacks in Mahomes, Allen and Hurts drop in ADP. I think Allen might already be down to a 3rd round pick. Hurts might be like at the very end of the 2nd round, whereas they were all going in the middle of the 2nd round beforehand. So it was more a prediction on expecting those quarterback ADPs to drop by the end of the season. So wanting to hopefully get them in the 3rd round instead. And 2, again, the opportunity cost in the 2nd round is so high. I mean, you're passing up on guys like Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry, T. Higgins, Devontae Smith. Like, those are all guys that, yes, while they come with their question marks, you still are expecting these quarterbacks to have another historic or career year when you're spending a 2nd round pick on them. And I think there's in the data I showed, there is a fairly steep drop off between the 2nd and the 3rd round. Now, it's, again, you need to make sure it's like the difference between like a mid-2nd and a mid-3rd versus like the 12-12 or the 2-12 and the 3-1. Like, that's obviously not as big of a difference. But overall, the opportunity cost there is just so high that you're passing on guys who theoretically have a pretty stable workload. And the biggest thing that I guess is a knock against them is potentially injury. But again, these quarterbacks just need to perform at such a high level for them to pay off at that ADP.
Yeah, I'm just going to bring up one more screen of another tool that you developed over at 4-4. And I think this one's possibly more simplistic than a lot of the advanced data that you're putting out there. But this is the one for me that, you know, it takes underdogs ADP and displays it as a draft grid effectively. And here, you know, you can see Patrick Mahomes, he's kind of slid back already, but he only slides so far because Travis Kelce is keeping him there. You know, lots of people are stacking him. And even if Mahomes slides, people are going to be looking about correlation with Jamar Chase. Jalen Hurts, he's slid well past AJ Brown now. And the only thing I think what's keeping him kind of around here is people stacking him with Devonta Smith. But Josh Allen, I feel like we could see him slip all the way back here to the kind of Stephon Diggs range, because it just feels like stacking such a focus for people now. And I think that this grid is one which I've been using this a lot, you know, just checking in with it frequently, because I think it's really useful to kind of gauge where people could be falling to over the next few months, because closing line value has become such a hot topic for people who are drafting a large amount of drafts. Just one other point that you'd kind of mentioned a lot in the best ball curve. You talked about how, like, the wide receiver curve flattens the most around round 5. And you said that this is where having player takes or using 4-4 rankings can be key to determine which players propel you to the playoffs. Looking at this kind of area of round 5 at the minute, you know, it really just dries up. You got Christian Kirk at the top, Michael Pittman, Chris Godwin, Ayuk, JSN. Is there anybody that you feel strongly about them, or are you more attracted to these guys in round 6?
Yeah, it's certainly not pretty. I mean, I do think the Bucs wide receivers are probably a little bit devalued. Obviously, going from Tom Brady to Baker Mayfield or whoever they're going to throw out there, a quarterback is a massive downgrade. But I also expect that concentration of targets to be extremely high, sort of on the AJ Brown, Devonta Smith level of concentration between just sort of Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. They obviously don't have Gronk there anymore either. They didn't last year, but those are two guys that, you know, theoretically they're probably going to have to throw the ball a ton. And the for receivers, the key is volume. It's not like we're looking at the quarterback where we need some efficiency as well. I do think it, you know, it's been a little bit of a hot topic too with the Seahawks wide receivers in Jaxon Smith-Njigba and Tyler Lockett going basically right next to each other, where I believe JSN was going pretty handily in front of Lockett up until this point. So it seems like there might be a bit of a switch here in the coming weeks. And I think I agree with that. Obviously could see Marquise Brown's ADP rise a little bit more with the DeAndre Hopkins cut. So I do think they all have their, again, they all have their question marks. They're being drafted there for a reason. The, you know, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin are certainly not the sexy picks at that ADP. But if you are starting, you know, with a couple of running backs, maybe a quarterback and a tight end, they're guys that are going to give you some usable weeks, and you're theoretically going to have, you know, 9-10 wide receivers in a roster build like that, where they'll give you the usable weeks, and then hopefully the guys you're drafting later on give you the spike weeks that propel your team to the playoffs. So I honestly, you know, kind of looking at it, prefer a little bit more of the seventh round guys. I mean, George Pickens, Jahan Dotson, Gabe Davis, those are all guys who, again, they're kind of the better and best ball players that you talk about with the high ceilings, have some of the explosive weeks that, you know, also come with the dud weeks as well. But I'm really excited about, I think, that trio of wide receivers as well.
We've got plenty of love for Deonte Johnson in the chat, and Rich very on brand for him, and we've got Johnny Edwards as well. And he's somebody I've been clicking a little bit. But we've also got a question for you. What are your thoughts on the potential risk-reward play of someone like Kadarius Toney? Do you think he's worth that risk at the minute with a potential upside?
Right now, no. I mean, they're just such strong rumors around DeAndre Hopkins signing with the Chiefs right now, and he needs to not sign there for him to pay off at that ADP. You're also, again, assuming that he steps into that role, is healthy for the full season. And I, if I remember correctly, I think Juju, who was the presumed wide receiver one for the Chiefs last year, was going in the eighth round. I could be misremembering, but again, obviously Tony's a little bit of a sexier pick than Juju was at that time, but I would rather take him in the ninth round if he drops that far with Hopkins signing. So I don't see it as that way right now. Again, they used him in some creative ways, but there's a lot of downside, I think, that you're buying into with Tony there.
Yeah, I've got Rich also coming on my mug. I've got a bad habit of making cups of tea and using my wife's mug, so I'm rocking Anna and Olaf from Frozen today. But we'll jump into a draft whilst we get going. Sam, is there anything in particular you've got going on over at 4-4 at the minute that you'd like to tell the people about?
Just the couple articles that you've referenced. Got going to have another article. Article that I'm co-writing with Connor Allen, talking about some of the pick'em games and stuff coming out hopefully later this week, if not early next week. And then we'll be doing a deeper dive on how to build a unique roster from a player standpoint on 4-4-4, excuse me, on Underdog coming up soon, because you'd be shocked. There were teams last week, wow, I'm all over the place. There were teams last year in BBM that were duplicated, like 18 player teams that were duplicated. Like I don't remember if it was pick for pick, like same round, whatever, but the same combination of 18 players were duplicated last year. And wow, now the tournament is 50% larger. Like there are going to be even more duplicate teams, and sort of looking at, you know, at what point in your drafts do you need to start thinking about differentiating a roster?
Well, that's a really good, and we've got a minute before the draft starts here. We're picking at pick six, but you mentioned in one of the articles about how important the first three picks of the draft are and how value dropped off after them. Am I remembering that right? Is that correct?
Yeah. And that sort of had to do with the quarterback drafting an article itself. And it's one of those things. I think, you know, Matthew Berry might have coined this phrase a long time ago, is you can't win your draft in the first round, but you can certainly lose it in the first round. And the first 2 to 3 rounds, to me, is not the place to go super far off the reservation in terms of drafting against ADP and having strong player takes. Like, all of these guys are great. Like, they're being drafted that early because we know a lot about them and all that sort of stuff. So I think it's one of those things, again, if you want to go a little bit off of ADP to make a Mahomes and Kelsey stack or something like that, like that's fair, but there's no reason to be like drafting Joe Burrow in the third round because you're really bullish on him. Like you can wait and not sacrifice that EV.
So we're up in a couple of picks. We've got pick six here. Before us, it's probably McCaffrey, Kelsey, Cooper Kupp, Eckler. Bijan Robinson's fallen a little. He was going around pick eight. But is there anyone in particular that you feel strongly that you prefer out of these guys?
Not in particular. I mean, I'd certainly be fine with any of McCaffrey, Kelsey, or Kupp, basically whichever one falls to us. You know, I think Kelsey here is the pick because then, you know, one of the benefits, and this is more of a redraft thing too, is when you invest this much in a tight end, you don't need to worry about the position like for the rest of the draft. Like in best ball, you probably want to draft one more. I do not draft a lot of the sort of extreme draft roster constructions of drafting one of the onesie positions. But when you draft a tight end with your first pick, or a quarterback with your second or third pick, there's no reason to be drafting certainly more than two. And so you have that security. we can basically unselect the tight end position for the longest time unless there's a screaming value. So I like that pick there.
Yeah, definitely. And, it's just hard to go too wrong with Kelsey. Just going back to kind of what we touched on, you don't lose your draft in the early rounds, but do you feel like if you've got one of those first 2-3 picks this year where it's pretty much a given that you go in Jefferson, Chase, or McCaffrey, and if you end up with a few of those in a row, do you feel like you start having to differentiate your second and third round picks? Because it was definitely a point last year where I felt like every time I had the 101 and I was getting Christian McCaffrey or Jonathan Taylor, I was coming back and ended up with T. Higgins, and it got to the point where I was like, I have far too much of this combination. If I have a lot of it, everyone else must have a lot of it, and how am I going to get different? At what point do you feel like the cost of getting different that early in the draft outweighs the actual good value of just taking the best players there?
Yeah, anecdotally, and that's something I plan on looking into when I write that article that I mentioned about building a unique team, is like, how much EV can you or should you sacrifice it in as a way to get unique? So anecdotally, again, I personally am not someone who max enters these tournaments, let alone max enters all of the tournaments. So it's pretty easy for me to not, get that. I also never get the 101 on Underdog, which is a complaint I've filed several times. But if you are max entering, I think, in my opinion, and again, this is more anecdotal, ADPs will shift enough throughout the off season that you're naturally going to build some of that. So if you have a cluster of five drafts in a row where you have the 101, then maybe you want to do some different things, but I'm not going out of my way to do that.
Okay, we're back up on the clock here. We could take Mahomes, his ADP is 19.9, or we could see if we could push it to the third round. There's Tony Pollard, Derrick Henry, Nick Chubb, Chris Olave, Devonta Smith, T. Higgins available. Anybody stand out to you?
Let's go with Mahomes. Let's do it.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. It's not.
It's one of those things where, again, we don't have to reach. We're getting these guys sort of at or slightly behind their ADP. And so it sort of makes sense to be doing that. And then again, our roster can just be full of running backs and wide receivers for the rest of the draft, and then draft a backup.
Yeah, very much so. Quarterback
later on.
I think it's slightly different on DraftKings. It's frustrating because they don't release the data in the same way. But I was trying to pour through everything from last year's finals, and obviously without seeing the entire data from the contest, which was 800,000 people, it's tricky to know. But in the final, the most common build was a 3-6-8-3 build. And even though there was a lot of elite quarterback teams in there, there was still a lot of elite quarterback, but with three total, and even elite tight end, but with three total. But I think if you're doing it, you've really got to be taking those picks late. It's just, you can't be using any kind of draft capital on them early. But this, so far on DraftKings, this looks like a pretty stable draft. A lot of the time I've seen double quarterback in the first two picks, or things get a little bit weird. There's a good few people in the chat by the looks of it who are in there with it, so it should be okay. In terms of DraftKings in general, the main difference is the 100-yard bonuses for the rushing and receiving, and then the quarterbacks get 300-yard passing bonuses. And having that kind of stack with Mahomes and Kelsey, it's so easy to picture them in week 17. Mahomes goes for 300 passing yards, 100 of them are Kelsey's, and you've just immediately got a huge points return there. So we're going to be up on the clock in a second. At the top of it, it's Mark Andrews, who's off our board most likely, DK Metcalf, Breece Hall, Calvin Ridley, Travis Etienne, and DeAndre Hopkins. Anybody particularly take your fancy there, Sam?
I mean, I would love if Metcalf fell to us here. I don't know if we have people in the stream drafting with us, so that's why I'm cautious to say these things. But I think either there we go. I mean, we could we could take Hopkins in the hope that he gets picked up by the Chiefs. And if he doesn't, like, I think it's still a fine pick. So let's go full Chiefs stack. Like, I'm never going to be against a potential heavy Chiefs stack.
No, and I'm completely fine with that, because I think with Hopkins, what landing spots, where could Hopkins land where you would be lower on him than he's going in the middle of the third round right now? Like, if he landed in Tennessee where he's visiting, would that drop his value for you?
That's the one place I was going to say. And that really shocked me to see, because it just doesn't make sense from both sides. Like, unless Tennessee really thinks they have a chance to compete this year and be among the AFC contenders, then, like, yes, wide receiver is for sure one of the positions of need that they still have. But I don't know. I feel like they're just sort of trying not that he would be this bad, but trying the Julio Jones experiment over again.
Yeah, it's just the Titans are a team that I never seem to get right. I mean, year after year, Mike Vrabel kind of coaches them up and gets more out of them than their name value probably suggests at time. And I really struggle with them. I think I look at them and they've got a week 7 bye in their first 6 games. I was writing about it recently. It's easy to project them to go 1-5. They played the Ravens in London in week 6. And it's like, okay, well, if they lost that game, then they have the bye week and then they play a home game against the Falcons. Would that be the kind of environment where you feel like, okay, well, this might be an easier time to give Will Levis a game? And but equally, I could see the Titans surprising everyone and being 3-3 at that point. And, you know, suddenly we've got egg on our face. So through 3 rounds, we're kind of in a zero RB build here. But this year kind of feels a bit different because the running backs are kind of being pushed down slightly. I mean, Najee Harris is at the top of ADP here. He's not somebody I've drafted at all this year, really. But then there's Jerry Jeudy, Justin Fields, Joe Mixon, who feels like somebody who could climb a bit. Anybody that you feel particularly drawn to?
This is a tough part of the
We could take draft. Mixon for a bit of week 17 correlation. They play the Chiefs in week 17.
They do, yeah. Let's go with that. Let's sort of go head first into this.
Keep building Chiefs on that. Bengals. And I think, you know, I mean, I think that's definitely something I'm aware of. That, like, by the time July rolls around and a lot more casual drafters arrive in the draft rooms, but Joe Mixon could end up being a third round pick quite quickly. I think, you know, he wasn't Sorry, go on.
Yeah, if we get confirmation that, you know, he's for sure going to be back with the team, you know, I don't remember if there were still sort of legal issues going on with him, but he would be going probably in the second round. I mean, they lost Samaje Perine, so his workload is probably about as safe as anyone's in that fourth round, assuming he gets. Stays with the Bengals.
Yeah, definitely. And I wrote an article yesterday about how, and put a video out this week about, like, how Hero RB, the definitions of it right now just feel like you can be a lot looser for him. You know, if we wanted to treat this as a Hero RB build, we could say, okay, Mixon's our hero because we believe he should be a second or third round pick, but still stick to that kind of thesis of not picking a running back in the first another running back before like round 7, where we know that guys like, you know, Leonard Fournette and James Conner have come out of there and had big seasons. Ramondre Stevenson last year. Is there any other running backs in the kind of the typical dead zone who you feel are worth more than they're being drafted out of a minute? You know, guys like Aaron Jones, Najee Harris, J.K. Dobbins.
Yeah, Aaron Jones was the first guy that came to mind for me. I mean, he's just had towards the end of last year, AJ Dillon had started to get a little bit more run, but I think Aaron Jones was dealing with the injury, but I think he's going to continue to be a large part of that offense. You know, obviously the Packers invested in wide receiver and tight end in the draft, but it's still going to be a big part of what the Packers want to do.
Yeah, definitely. It feels like it could be a good outlet. So we're kind of in this little spell where there's DJ Moore at the top and Drake London. I find myself, I keep clicking Drake London recently. I'm not entirely sure why, but I quite like Chris Godwin as well. And then Marquise Brown a little bit further down, who actually goes just there.
You said you like clicking Drake London. So do I. I don't know what it is. I don't know that I... Oh, I know. Okay, let me rephrase. I know that I don't have the same level of conviction in Desmond Ridder as the Falcons seem to have, but he was so good last year when he did get the ball. He, all of his advanced metrics were outstanding. Was one of the best rookie wide receivers, hands down. And again, if he has a better quarterback, then he's again probably going up into the maybe third round of drafts as well. And I feel like we're doing a lot of speculation of if these guys do this, then that, but there's obviously, again, some downside with London if they are as run heavy as they were last year. But I think Ben Gretsch, or it might've been Eric Beinfort actually on Ship Chasing a couple weeks ago, made a really good point of like with the Falcons and the Bears, like they were so far sort of like on one end of the spectrum in terms of running the ball that they're going, like, even if they're still like on the lower end of passing the ball, I don't want to say no way, but there's a very small likelihood that they're running the ball that much again this year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Justin Fields, it was like historically low. I think it was about like, you know, 12 completions a game or something. Like, it just, there's certain players like Justin Fields has to positively regress in passing volume this year. Kenny Pickett feels like he has to positively regress in terms of the amount of touchdowns that he throws this year. And I feel like a lot of the time, those are the players who are devalued coming into drafts. We're almost back up. We could take Kadarius Toney. I mean, but I feel like between Mahomes, Kelsey, and Hopkins, we're possibly all right. I mean, Mike Evans is there. We could Brandon Ayuk, Dalvin Cook, Miles Sanders, Deontay Johnson, who the chat, we know the chat loves.
I like Mike Evans here. Again, I talked about the Bucs wide receivers. I think they're a little undervalued. He's gonna have his good games, I think, no matter who's really throwing him the ball. So I think he's probably got definitely a bit of a safer floor than Tony, which is not necessarily what we're going for in best ball, but with, again, the heavy investment in Kelsey, a tight end and quarterback, we're going to need some usable weeks, especially as we hit the bye weeks.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things I found in last year's DK finals data, which was 969 teams in the final, and over 430 of them had taken five wide receivers in the first nine rounds. So it's definitely something I'm always aware of drafting on here. It just, underdog, it always seems to go a bit quicker than that. But we've got a couple of questions in the chat that I'm going to get to. But while you're here, folks, if you're not subscribed already, do me a favor and hit that subscribe button. We've got loads more best ball content this month. Doing two streams a week, one on Sunday, one on Wednesday. Got James Brimacombe from Football Guys joining us this Sunday. Next week, Colm Kelly from RotoViz. Week after, we've got Pete Overs there. It's just going to be best ball, best ball, best ball. So hit the subscribe button, hit the like button. Let's get over to a couple of the questions. We've got James. We've got, what does Sam think is the most EV aspect of best ball roster construction, e.g. stacking versus week 17, correlation versus draft capital gained? So I'll let you try and dig into that. Maybe we have to come back to it after the pick.
Let's come back to it after the pick, because I need to think about the answer to that, because it is a very good question.
So we're at one quarterback, one running back. We've got three wide receivers and one tight end so far. So it feels like we can kind of go where we like with this. We've got George Pickens, James Conner, Isaiah Pacheco, Treylon Burks. Treylon Burks is somebody I haven't been able to pull the trigger on yet. Are you into Burks this year?
No, it's again, even though the volume might be there, I just don't have a lot of confidence in that Tennessee offense right now. I'd prefer probably Gabe Davis. I can't see the questions covering some of the other players.
Oh, sorry, but, my bad. come back to you, James, in a second.
There we go.
Well, yeah, after Gabe Davis, it started like Brandon Cooks, Jahan Dotson. But I'm good with Gabe Davis if you are. I think this is a good sort of post-hype time for him. And we'll get back to James's question there. So quite a lot that you could dig into, but if you had to sum it up into a kind of succinct way.
I feel like this is a bit of a cop-out, but I think player takes and sticking to the player takes is probably the highest EV aspect. It maybe not EV, but the one area that you can still get some value out of, because everybody knows about stacking. Everyone knows about week 17 correlation, that, you know, the draft capital gain and stuff like that is starting to get more pull. I mean, everyone has always known intuitively that like getting a player after ADP is generally good. It's just, we're starting to have more data backed behind that. So it is having those player takes, and for some of, especially in the later rounds, to say like, hey, I'm really in on player X and using a lot of your last round picks on him, and that could burn you. But it's also like in the 16th, 17th, 18th round, like you're not spending a ton of value in there. So that's the point in the draft where you want to have some different player takes as well, because you can, again, overinvest in some of those players.
No, I think that makes absolute sense. So we're kind of closing in again on our next pick. Any thoughts for a running back here? Would be, you know, round eight, and there's James Conner, who's kind of slid 15 picks past ADP, Alvin Kamara, who isn't somebody I've been drafting a lot of, and then David Montgomery or Javonte Williams in Denver, who again is somebody I haven't picked yet, but I'm definitely open to being persuaded if you've got strong feelings about any of them, or we could go a different way and take Quentin Johnston, who's a little further down, or Zay Flowers.
I mean, I feel like 15 picks past ADP for James Conner is almost too good to pass up.
Well, and I've got the Spike Week overlay here, and you can see I've got 23% exposure James Conner. I'm about 25 drafts in this contest through, and it just feels like with everything that's going on in Arizona, even if Kyler Murray isn't healthy, that James Conner can be very much in line for a good season. We've got one more question we'll hit on here quickly. If the Vikings move on from Dalvin Cook, how could they possibly get any pass heavier? Indications with personnel suggest they'll try. I know you put out a lot of good stuff about play calling today. Do you think that that's something that the Vikings could move more pass heavier?
I don't think they will. I think they have, if they do move on from Cook, that they have enough confidence in Alexander Mattison to maintain the level of pass happiness, I guess, if you will, in their offense, to the point where, again, they're not going to be throwing the ball 80% of the time. They drafted, I believe, Dwayne McBride and another running back as well. So it's like, it's not like they don't have a suitable backup. I mean, we've seen them give Madison a huge workload in some of the games that Cook has missed. One point I heard is like, at this point in the season, in the off season, like what's the point of cutting Cook unless you're using that money for like an extension for a Justin Jefferson or something like that. So honestly, like in the end, like I wouldn't be shocked if Cook is just like still on the team by the time this season starts.
It just doesn't feel like there's too much reason for either the team now or for Cook to be going elsewhere. Like, it feels like, you know, the one that kept getting linked was Miami, but they seem quite settled. You know, we've got Devin Achane, we've got Mostert, we've got blanking on him now as well, the other former Niner running back. And yeah, it just feels like there's not too many opportunities for Cook to go and be the kind of three down running back that he would like to be. We're almost back up here with our ninth round pick. Kamara, who's fallen 18 picks past his ADP, Javonte Williams, who's fallen 10. Like, you know, this isn't a draft where people are hoovering up the running backs. At wide receiver, we've got Elijah Moore, Juju Smith-Schuster, and Lazard before we start talking about reaching a bit further than we probably need to here. Yeah, anybody standing out for you?
For me, it's Elijah Moore. I'm very bullish on him in the new situation in Cleveland. There are obviously some rumors about, you know, I'm now realizing there are some rumors with Hopkins going to potentially to the Bills or the Browns here. So him going to one of those teams could siphon some volume from either Moore or Davis. But Moore, I think, is just, if they don't sign DeAndre Hopkins, set up to be in the perfect sort of number two role in Cleveland behind Amari Cooper, and just, again, sort of get a fresh start with, again, hope this is also banking on Deshaun Watson returning to his form. But I really, really like Elijah Moore, especially in the ninth round right now.
Yeah, I think it's a nice kind of bet that I'm willing to take on. You know, I think particularly on DraftKings where it's full PPR, you know, we've seen slot receivers just be absolute money over here, players like Amon-Ra St. Brown. So we're kind of through the first half of the draft here and seeing teams starting to take the second quarterbacks a bit. So, you know, we've got very kind of on brand for DraftKings, Josh Allen and Joe Burrow team picking out of two. We've got a team with Dak Prescott and Anthony Richardson. Do you feel like there's a big drop-off in the quarterback tier coming up? I mean, it's not something I think we need to particularly worry about because we've got Patrick Mahomes, but do you feel like there's a big gulf drop? Like, I'll pull up the current kind of quarterbacks, Daniel Jones, Aaron Rodgers, Geno Smith, Jared Goff, Russell Wilson. Where do you feel like the next kind of big tier break is?
I think it's after Geno Smith. Again, I'm very bullish on Geno this year. Again, with the weapons that they have, I think they're going to continue to pass the ball quite a bit. There are obviously still a lot of people that were hurt by Russell Wilson last year. Rodgers in a new system, despite the good weapons that he has. I think that's the teardrop for me.
Yeah, that makes plenty of sense. So we're a couple picks away now. Daniel Jones, Juju Smith-Schuster, Aaron Rodgers, Alan Lazard would give us a little bit of week 17 correlation with the Browns and Elijah Moore, who we just took. It's not one that I'm desperate for because it feels like that could be horrendous weather in Cleveland in week 17. But there's not too many players, but Jamal Williams a little bit further down who give us correlation with the Buccaneers. And I do quite like Jamal Williams, but again, it's one of those where the role might be slightly hard to project. Is there anybody standing out to yourself? Or we could go to Tyler Boyd, who would give us more for that Kansas City game and just really prioritize that one.
Let's go with Jamal Williams. You've got the correlation there. I do think New Orleans has a chance to be a pretty decent offense this year as well. I think, you know, the Saints have never really wanted to give Kamara a ton of touches, especially at the goal line. I think Williams could just sort of fit right into that role, basically do what he did in Detroit in New Orleans. So I like that pick.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, Alvin Kamara wasn't really getting the goal line work last year when it was pretty much just him and Taysom Hill. So it just seems very easy to look at Jamal Williams and think, well, particularly if Alvin Kamara got suspended, then, you know, perhaps Jamal Williams gets a decent run out to start the year. And even if Joe Mixon ended up with a suspension to start the year, if Alvin Kamara also ended up suspended, then Jamal Williams might be good. Those are the kind of pairings sometimes I look at, like players that you can pair with somebody like Samaje Perine, who's going to see possibly a higher snap percentage to start the year than he will down the stretch. Dalton Kincaid goes there at the back end of the 10th round. I've actually seen him creeping up into the single-digit rounds recently. Are you in on Dalton Kincaid?
I am not. I mean, it's the rookie tight end thing. They still have Dawson Knox. Yes, attaching yourself to a Bills player is never really a bad idea. But it's, again, it's just one of those things that outside of him being a Bills player, there is not a lot going on for him. I mean, obviously a great prospect as well, but I just, I struggle to, to pull that trigger there.
So we're nearly back up. Jerry McKinnon's there, who obviously would add to our Chiefs stack. He's kind of fallen a full round past ADP. Khalil Herbert's there, who'd give us playoff correlation against Cleveland, Arizona, and Atlanta, so across the whole streak of it. Adam Thielen, who maybe is the wide receiver one in Carolina, Jacoby Myers. Anybody standing out for you, Sam?
None of the wide receivers really do. It's probably between Herbert and McKinnon for me, so I'll let you
Let's go with Khalil Herbert. I quite like Khalil Herbert. I can't quite quit on him. I had a lot of exposure to him last year, and it didn't really pay off in the biggest ceiling way possible. But I do think he's probably still the most dynamic player in that backfield for now. So we're kind of 11 rounds through now, and we've got four running backs. So after starting off with just one in the first seven rounds, it doesn't feel like a priority anymore. Like, I tend to feel like if I've hit four by about round 12 on DraftKings, you could roll with a five running back room if you wanted to and max out at six. So we've got a team of Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes, DeAndre Hopkins, Joe Mixon, Drake London, Mike Evans, Gabe Davis, James Conner, Elijah Moore, Jamal Williams, and Khalil Herbert. Do you think we need to start sort of putting one eye on what we're going to do for our second quarterback or push that a few more rounds?
I think we continue to push. I mean, there are still some guys on the board that, you know, are, I don't want to say secured a starting role, but, you know, even pairing him with one of the rookie guys, whether it's Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, someone along those lines that, I mean, we could even possibly wait until Desmond Ridder at the end there to stack him with Drake London. So I'm not in any rush to draft another quarterback. I think wide receiver is the position to attack at this point.
Yeah. And like, again, kind of looking back at last year's data, of the 969 teams that made the DraftKings final, over 70% of the teams had eight wide receivers or more in their build. So it's definitely a format where aggressively adding wide receivers is by no means a bad thing. And as we're kind of a few picks away, you know, there's this kind of pile up of tight ends who aren't particularly, you know, nobody really enjoys picking one of those. But at wide receiver, we've got Mingo, we've got Romeo Dubs, we've got Michael Gallup, we've got Nico Collins, and Marquez Valdes-Scantling, of course, who's still in Kansas City. I mean, we are in danger at a certain point of possibly overstacking, but with only Mahomes and Kelce definitively on the team right now, I don't think we're there yet. But I've banged the drum for Marquez Valdes-Scantling before, and he's let me down, so I'm not going to go too heavy this year.
Yeah, I mean, I really like probably any of those top, you know, six guys, maybe except Michael Gallup. I don't know what it is about him. Just his disappointing season last year sort of had me soured on him a little bit. But I think if Dobbs falls to us, that would be my favorite pick. It just doesn't – like, I understand that Christian Watson had that fantastic stretch of games last year. Again, they invested in pass catchers through the draft, but there should not be a, what is it, 8-round gap between Dobbs and Watson in Green Bay when, again, we don't know necessarily what Jordan Love's tendencies are going to be. That's more of a Christian Watson thing than a Dobbs thing that Dobbs should be sort of pushed up. But more so that Watson should be pulled down, but it's that gap just doesn't compute.
No, I found taking Christian Watson quite a hard pick to make. And I think there was a report today talking about how it could easily be that Romeo Doubs ends up being the wide receiver one or the guy who sees the most targets out of the two. Yeah. And there were points where he was impressive last year, you know, in a year which wasn't a particularly impressive year for the Packers. So I'm definitely fine with that pick. I haven't taken a huge amount of him yet, I think about 5%. Mike Gallup's someone I've kind of talked myself into because a few weeks ago he was kind of going around this round 14 range and that felt too cheap. But it seems like now he's kind of creeping up to around 12. I'll probably ease back a little bit more. We've got a couple more picks before us. And yeah, we've got a 1-4-6-1 build at the minute, but no areas that feel desperately of need. Yeah, and again, a lot of the guys who we talked about being there before are still there. Marcus Valdes-Scantling still there. Jalen Warren's there, who's somebody I've been drafting a lot of. Jordan Love's at the top of the list. We can always add him to Romeo Dub or keep pushing back quarterback a little bit further. In terms of tight ends, again, there's always tight ends in this range. It doesn't feel like you need to cram one in unless you've got zero tight ends by this point. I have been drafting far too much Greg Dulcich. I can't seem to quit him. So we're one pick away. What are you banging the table for, Sam?
I don't hate taking Jordan Love here, actually. Again, seven spots past ADP. We get the stack with Romeo Doubs. You know, is probably has about as secure of a starting job as any of the other quarterbacks in this range, given what Green Bay has done, and really is just a bye week fill in for us for Patrick Mahomes again. So now we're done with the quarterback position and can focus on the rest.
I think for me the difference between what I'm imagining Jordan Love to be and Desmond Ridder to be, it's not huge, and I'm quite happy to take Drake London without Desmond Ridder and just, you know, play that as a skinny stack. But Romeo Doubs, it feels like he could get more volume from Jordan Love, and I'm kind of happy enough to do that. We've got Davis in the chat who's unhappy with my love for Jalen Warren. I know he's a big Najee Harris guy, but in the words of Patrick Corain, it just might be that Jalen Warren's actually the better running back out of the two of them. So we'll see. I think that's definitely going to be an interesting one.
The other thing, too, with Ridder, and maybe this is just a pipe dream that I keep coming up with, is that the Falcons trade for Ryan Tannehill. It just feels like it's too good of a fit that the NFL will, like, it just won't happen. And, like, everyone thinks that it should happen because, again, the Falcons are in a position to compete for the NFC this year with how poor the rest of the quarterbacks. I mean, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, but he'd be a top six quarterback, potentially Tannehill in the NFC. If he were to go to the Falcons, would have an easy path to the playoffs. So it's, yeah, with all the other moves that Atlanta made this offseason, to stick with Desmond Ridder, who, again, was okay in the couple of games he played last year, but certainly wasn't, you know, playing gangbusters by any means.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's one of those where it's easy to see it being one of it where we get closer to the season and the Falcons just haven't seen enough and they play it as, okay, well, this isn't disbelief in Ridder, but then when the season starts going downhill, they make a change. So we're back on the clock. We've got a 2-4-6-1 build. We've got Matthew Stafford, Gerald Everett, Tank Bigsby, Roshan Johnson, but we already took Khalil Herbert. I don't know how you feel about that. Dawson Knox, Taysom Hill, DJ Chark, Alec Pierce. 9 seconds or Jaden Reed?
To me, we could go Jaden Reed and add another person to that stack, yeah.
Yeah, it's a, you know, possibly a slight reach by about 12 picks. But, you know, we're kind of into that area of the draft and we've not really reached on anyone so far. I'm going to have to start with the Najee slander before we lose Davis tonight. But I think I can see, on the whole, though, I'm just much higher on Pittsburgh this year than I was last year. I think, you know, I mentioned it briefly earlier. it just seems impossible that we don't score more touchdowns this year. Do you put a lot of weight into things like positive touchdown regression, Sam?
A lot of weight, no. I mean, I think it's, yeah, I understand that a lot of this stuff is already baked into these players' ADP. Like, players know that, I'm struggling to come up with an example off the top. Like, everyone knows that Deontay Johnson didn't score any touchdowns this year, but he still had a tremendous amount of volume. So that's inherently baked into his ADP. It's, you know, you think about betting too with like sides and totals and stuff. It's like, you can build a simple model, but like Vegas probably already has a lot of that stuff baked into their line. So it's more of the qualitative aspects of things that you need to consider to get an understanding of, again, where can you differentiate, again, your player takes or your team takes, whatever, to say like, okay, I expect the Packers to be, you know, a 70% pass rate team, which is why I'm going to invest heavily in their passing attack. Like, that's a reason to do that. If you believe that, it's not, you know, something that everyone already sort of knows, is that, well, there's some uncertainty with the quarterback. Like, yes, everyone knows that there's uncertainty, which is why, you know, Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs are not being drafted as high. Like, if Rodgers was still there, they'd have much higher ADPs, but he's not. So,
so we're about to be back up. There's Taysom Hill sitting at the top. There's Jeff Wilson, Ezekiel Elliott, Curtis Samuel, Marvin Mims, Jerome Ford, John Metchie, Chase Brown, Michael Mayer, Rashid Shaheed, Tyquan Thornton. Anybody that you've been particularly drawn to in this area? It's one
it looks where like it's someone you've been a little drawn to too, which is Marvin Mims. Again, I just think the Broncos are in the perfect post high sleeper sort of atmosphere right now, because again, things were so bad, and yes, again, there's some optimism because of Sean Payton coming in, but you know, did Russ Wilson really fall off that much in 1 year type thing?
We saw those glimpses towards the back end of last year once Nathaniel Hackett was gone, and it just seemed like there was just enough to be able to bring us back in on it. And I think, you know, you look at what Sean Payton's done since he got there. He took, you know, he's invested in the offensive line. You know, I wouldn't be surprised at all if we see him try to just tone down a little bit of what Russell Wilson does at times. And my co-host Rich on the Dynasty side of things has talked about how he thinks that Sean Payton could be the perfect person to develop Russell Wilson into more of a pocket passer. And Marvin Mims, it's impossible not to just focus on the fact that the Broncos traded up to get him. You know, I think it was Sean Payton's first pick, you know, stuff like that. It feels like it matters.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. Davis mentioning in the chat that the Broncos are number one in spending this year for that O-line. And it feels like if that offensive line can give Russell Wilson just a little bit of time, then I'm not sure about him cooking, but he might just be able to do the bare minimum that keeps our players fantasy relevant. And
hey, at least be able to throw some things in the microwave.
So we're a few picks away. We have a 2-4-8-1 build. Tight end is definitely kind of drying up a little bit. There's guys like Hayden Hurst, Tyler Conklin. Tyler Conklin gives a little bit of week 17 correlation, or we could look at someone like Luke Musgrave if you want to build out that Jordan Love stack. I'm not sure it's the kind of offense we maybe need to go too overboard. But yeah, Hayden Hurst, Isaiah Likely, any of those guys appealing, or do you want to try pushing it a little bit further? Because yeah,
Tyler Conklin, but it can you scroll up? And I'm trying to see like what these other. I was trying to see what the other teams us had drafted to see if like how much.
So tight end there's a couple of teams. There's one team with one, and then everyone. Yeah, a couple of teams with one tight end, and a couple of teams with two.
Who are the receivers available?
So at receiver, we've got Claypool, Josh Downs, Greg Dortch, Robert Woods, Josh Palmer, Khalil Shakir.
We're going to increase that Josh Downs exposure just a little bit more. I'm really excited about him. I think, you know, he provides an outlet for Anthony Richardson. I loved him as a prospect as well. Just there were very few red flags in his profile. Obviously wasn't like the burner and sort of top tier athlete, but he just is all around like a really good player. And I'm trying to essentially attach myself to the Anthony Richardson wagon as much as I can.
So he's somebody like that. It feels like you have to defend yourself when you say you like Anthony Richardson, because people are so burned from the Trey Lance experience and burned from even Malik Willis last year that people just see these young athletic quarterbacks coming in and it's like, oh, well, you know, he's not a perfect passer straight away, but it's like his upside is so huge and purely for fantasy that it just seems so good. I probably won't have as much Anthony Richardson as I did when Trey Lance was in his rookie year or even last year, but he's just going to be fun to watch. And at a bare minimum, I don't mind losing money on players who are fun. So we're two picks away. So there's plenty of players towards the top here who are kind of fine. Jerome Ford, Chase Brown. In terms of tight end, Tyler Conklin did go. So there's Zach Ertz, who's not somebody I've been able to pull the trigger on. We could probably push this a little bit further now because most of these guys, I don't know, is there anybody you feel strongly there that you'd like to take this turn?
I was going to say Noah Fant, but he just went. So, I mean, like all these guys are basically the same to me. I really like Jerome Ford. Again, it seems very, very unlikely that the Browns bring back Kareem Hunt. I think, in fact, they've said as much that they don't plan on signing him. And, you know, Nick Chubb needs a backup at some point. Like I still think they're obviously comfortable giving Chubb a decent workload, but they don't want to give him sort of, I don't think, a Derrick Henry level workload either.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's easy to write in somewhere between 15 and 18 touches very easily for Nick Chubb, but I don't think the days of where we saw him having 20 plus touches per game are going to be necessarily what we want to do, because it seems we want to pass the ball a bit more. But yeah, I mean, Jerome Ford, if something happened to Nick Chubb in training camp, where would we be on about taking him? Like, you know, fifth, sixth round or something?
He would shoot up probably. Yeah, I would think at least that high. I mean, I think if that's the case, then maybe their stance on signing Kareem Hunt changes a little bit. Or I'm trying to think. I mean, or bringing in a Zeke or a Leonard Fournette, someone like that. I feel like if Chubb did get hurt, but Jerome Ford would go up to at least probably a 10th round pick, even if they did sign one of those other running backs.
Yeah. So we've kind of really pushed tight end probably as far as we can in terms of, you know, round one and then nothing till at least round 18. Do you think there's any argument to kind of taking two players? Because we're really into the dart throw area at this point in the draft to make up for the fact that we haven't got anyone, or do you just saddle yourself up to Travis Kelce and just say, you know, if Travis Kelce isn't a good enough 16 of 17 weeks, then this team's failing anyway.
Yeah, and it is slightly different math because DraftKings has the 20 rounds. So I think, again, with the extra pick, like you can... Ooh, really want Deuce Vaughn there, huh? I'm just trying to see, like, who are the wide receivers available? Because that's the other part of it, too, is like...
Well, we could take Justin Ross or Watson for a bit of Chiefs stack, or, you know, there's Marvin Jones, Josh Palmer. At tight end, we've got Trey McBride. That's probably the most obvious one. Or Hunter Henry, Jelani Woods, Cade Otton.
You pick a tight end.
Let's go Trey McBride. But I mean, you know, Trey McBride was what you needed last year, right at the end. He flashed, and I don't think I'm kind of in on Zach Ertz making a full recovery. And even if he does, is he really going to be what this new Cardinals management want to see on the field? I feel like Trey McBride could definitely have a clearer path. So, yeah, so we're two picks left. We've got a 2-5-9-2, Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes, DeAndre Hopkins, Joe Mixon, Drake London, Mike Evans, Gabe Davis, James Conner, Elijah Moore, Jamal Williams, Khalil Herbert, Romeo Dubs, Jordan Love, Jaden Reed, Marvin Mims, Josh Downs, Jerome Ford, and Trey McBride. So we've got that kind of nice little run of three rookie wide receivers there, which I think...
I didn't realize that. It's one of those things where, like, you're drafting and then, like, you see it after the fact. You're like, oh, that's what I did.
I don't mind that. I think, you know, it's a fun area of a draft to take upside shots on wide receivers. And again, we've got Davis, who sort of said, you don't think 33-year-old Titan can recover from a late ACL tear. Yeah, I'm going out on a ledge with that one, definitely. So we're coming back around. So 2-5-9-2 is the bill we've got. At the top, we've got Trey Lance, Gus Edwards, Jimmy G, who's been falling ever since the news of his foot injury, James Robinson, Juice Vaughn, Isaiah Likely, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Any kind of late round darts who stand out to you?
Click on that flex tab.
So on the flex tab, yep.
Yeah. I mean, well, it looks like we both really like Gus Edwards. Not sure that we need another running back. If you want, we could take Isaiah Likely. He's essentially Mark Andrews' insurance. You know, if we want to buy into the Justin Ross hype as well, like all of these are literally I could close my eyes and
let's take Isaiah Likely. I mean, pick something. I'm a Ravens fan. I'm always going to have too much exposure to the Ravens, but the buzz around the Ravens is that Isaiah Likely's been looking really good in OTAs and, you know, just picked up where he'd left off last year. So the team are talking him up as somebody they expect to benefit from Todd Monken. And I always like the idea of perhaps one of these players could really pop in the playoffs and give you that. And having taking Travis Kelce in the first round and then not gone with any of us till round 18 or 19, I'm kind of completely fine with that three tight end build. But yeah, so 2-5-9-3. Sam, I got to let you pick somebody for the last pick when we get to it. Anybody, you know, on DraftKings.
Pull those wide receivers up.
So DraftKings, we're going deeper. So there's guys who over on Underdog, you might not get the chance to draft as often, of course. You know, it was Justin Ross, Tim Patrick, Randall Cobb, Mike Wilson, the wide receiver in Arizona who's been creeping up draft boards. We've got, you know, Kevontae Turpin, Isaiah McKenzie in Indy, David Bell in Cleveland, Nelson Aguilar, Trent Sherfield, Deontay Harty. He's somebody who's kind of quite interesting. Kayshon Boutte for the real. You know, that gives us Chiefs, Broncos, and Buffalo correlation. Any faith in Boutte?
No. Do you have any faith in any of these guys down here?
No, not at all,
that's
really.
Some of these names, man. I mean,
Tyler Scott's another one. It gives us a bunch of correlation, but it's just hard to believe in.
Some people are hyping up Braxton Berrios a little bit, thinking he might get in on the wide or three wide receiver sets. I wouldn't hate Justin Ross too. Again, buying into the hype with the Chiefs, getting the stack. Like if Hopkins doesn't sign there, then we do only have him and Kelce. So, and again, I'd never be afraid to Sorry, now my dog's going.
No, no, that's good. Well, we're back on the clock.
Crazy.
Let's go with Justin Ross and build out that Chiefs stack a little bit more, which seems quite nice. I know you've got to get out of here quickly, so we'll just wrap things up a little bit. EJ at The Climb, who has said they've been big on Isaiah Likely recently. Go check out The Climb. Their YouTube channel is really nice and some really good streams lately. Big fans of what we're doing over there. And before we wrap things up, if you haven't subscribed already, hit that subscribe button. We've got loads going on this month and a lot of really great guests, and I do not want you to miss them out. So we ended up with a 2-5-10-3, which isn't a build I've built a lot of, but I quite like that because, you know, we started with that elite pairing of Travis Kelce and Mahomes. Hopkins, Mixon, London, Evans, Gabe Davis, Connor, Elijah Moore, Jamal Williams, Khalil Herbert, Romeo Dubs, Jordan Love, Jaden Reed, Marvin Mims, Josh Downs, Jerome Ford, Trey McBride, and Isaiah Likely, Justin Ross. So kind of looking back at it now, you know, you talked about in your article about how to deal with the elite quarterbacks, the 2v2s that you can sometimes end up on. Do you feel like there were any obvious pivot points in this draft where we could have gone in a different direction with it?
I don't think so. I mean, it made sense to stack Kelce with Mahomes. The fact that we got Mahomes, too, as the second quarterback off the board, not that that matters as much, but it does play into it, the fact that Allen didn't fall into the third round either. So, like, the opportunity cost, I guess, sort of levels off a little bit compared to our competition. But I really liked, again, the way it did play out. Again, we were able to get Mixon, which offers us the correlation. And again, draft is this for right is the big phrase of, well, every offseason. And if we are right that Mixon stays with the team and is, again, continues to be the workhorse for Cincinnati, then again, we essentially got a fourth round or a second round pick in the fourth round. So that helps a little bit. I think there are plenty of outlets for a lot of these players' ADP to rise outside of, you know, injury to other teammates, and few reasons for essentially their ADP to fall outside of Hopkins signing with Tennessee, which would be a shame for really everyone.
Yeah, definitely. I'm pretty pleased with this draft. I think it's nice. You know, the running backs, all five of them have different bye weeks, which isn't something I particularly hunt out, but it's a nice little benefit. You know, we don't need to worry about being particularly weak there at any point, even though we've only got five. And I think, you know, between Mixon plus Connor plus Williams plus Herbert, that's probably going to take care of an awful lot of it. Tight ends. Yeah, I mean, we can make an argument that possibly waiting that long wasn't ideal, or maybe make an argument we didn't need three, but it's just, you know, it's tiny little differences, really. And all in all, you know, pretty pleased with it as a draft. Before we start wrapping things up, though, I just want to show a little love to a few of the people in the comments. You know, we've got Fantasy Football Garage in here, another great channel. He's been working really hard getting growing stuff over there. Davis, him and Hope have been doing some fantastic streams. So if you're in the comments, go check out some of these other people's channels. There's so much good best ball content out there, and I really think that you should be just absorbing as much of it as possible, because these are the conversations that make me smarter. Sam, is there anything you want to plug before I let you get out of here? What you got going on at 4 for 4?
Yeah, just check out. You can find all my stuff over on 4for4.com. You can see a lot more of my stuff on Twitter at Sam Hoppin, including pictures of this rambunctious dog that is continuing to run around. But yeah, appreciate you having me on the Tom show, Tom.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm fumbling over my words all afternoon. But yeah, really appreciate it. Had a great time. Would love to come back later in the summer and do another draft with you.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I mean, you know, both myself and Rich, we're big fans of what you do. I think, you know, there's so much data out there about fantasy football now, and anybody who's finding ways to visualize it interestingly and make it easier for people to digest, that's something we can always buy into. So go check out Sam on Twitter at Sam Hoppen. Check out his work with 444. Later this week, we'll be back with James Brimacombe from Football Guys for another best ball draft. I know Rich has got some dynasty buys and sells coming up this week. We're going to be back soon and just keep on rolling through the summer.